Good evening. I hope everybody is well. Please join me in saying the Anabako. Anabako. Gedula chemincha. Tati. Tserura. Alephet Gimel. Yutaf Tzadi. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora. Kufrei Shayin, Sintet Nun. And the letters of the month of Adar. The Kuf, the double agent that created the constellation Dagim, the fishes, and also the month of Adar. And the Gimel that created the planet Tzedek, the planet Jupiter. Na gibor dor sheyudcha kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalad yud kaf shin. Tacharem rakamesit katra tamid gamlem betetresh tzaditaf gimel. Chasim kadosh b'rotucha na'el adatach. Het kuf bet tet nun ayin. יחיד גאה למך פנה זוכרי קדושתך י"ג למד ה"זין קוף. שבתנו קבל ושמע צעקתנו יודע תעלומות שנקופיו צדית יודתיו. And the last verse, the eighth verse, the verse that we say in a whisper that we call silently, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vaed. How many of you missed my directed intention, my commentary on each verse, or most of the verses? How many of you were able to make those directed intentions on your own? How many of you were able to keep your mind quiet? This is the practicing the skill of meditation, as the children of Israel were taught how to meditate, using the Hebrew letters, using the Ana B'Koach, not the Ana B'Koach in its form that we have, but the Ana B'Koach in the letters themselves. I'm now going to read a verse from the Zohar, from section 8. Actually, I'm going to read from section 9. The bread of the first fruits. I'm going to read verse 74. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadeinu kunenei aleinu maaseh yadeinu kunenehu. Ela lemalka dehava lebar yechida v'chalash yomachad v'hava ta'iv lemei kol amru yeku berei demalka Asvav tada v'ad yekul leila yishtekach mechla umzona acharab aveta avdu haki kevan de'akal hahu asvav ta amar mikan ulhal a yekul kol ma di'ihu ta'iv He answers, this is similar to a king who had an only son who became ill. One day he wished to eat. They said, let the king's son take this medicine, but before he eats it, no food whatsoever should be in the house. They did so. After he had taken the medicine, they said, from now on he may eat whatever he desires, and it will do him no harm. The verse is discussing the holiday of Pesach, and the medicine is the matzah, not eating chametz during the month of Nisan, during the week of Pesach. By restricting ourselves during that 1 week, taking control of the idea of freedom, which is the month of Nisan, taking control of the desire to receive for oneself alone, which is what Pesach is about, controlling that animal instinct, those animal passions. Then we can eat chametz all we want the rest of the year. But not to eat chametz during Pesach is considered idol worship. It's a really big no-no. Which brings us to the discussion. Tonight's class is continuing our classes on mitzvot. Last week was the first class, and we spoke about what is a mitzvah. Before we go on to start to discuss the mitzvot, does anybody have any questions? Okay. There are two levels or two sets of mitzvot. There are the mitzvot for the children of Israel, totaling 613. 248 positive, representing or connecting to the body parts of 248 in a man. And 613 mitzvot, 365 negative mitzvot that say do not. They connect to the 365 ligaments, veins and sinews in the body. They also connect to the 365 days of the year. The other set of mitzvot is the mitzvot of the children of Noah. There are seven of those mitzvot. The seven mitzvot of the children of Noah, B'nai Noah, and the 613 all come under the category of the Esser Dibrot. The Esser Dibrot are part of the 613. And essentially all seven of the B'nai Noach mitzvot are seven of the ten. So as we speak of mitzvot, we will speak in detail about all of them, but we will sometimes cross-categorize, and please ask questions if I get a little confusing in the way I categorize mitzvot. The reason that we get confusing about it is because our source, the lists that have been compiled over the years, have different sets of mitzvot, different ways of describing the mitzvah. But let's start out with the simple one, the one that is the first of the Esser Dibrot. The source in the Torah, in the scroll, is Anochi Adonai Elohecha Asher Hotzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim mi beit avadim. This is chapter 20, verse 1 of the book of Exodus. It's in the portion of Yitro. Now I will read a translation of that verse. I am Hashem your God, who has taken you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of slavery. But actually, the punctuation on that verse in most English translations do not follow the trope that is on the Hebrew. So we need to diversify a little bit or go off the direct path and understand what is trope. The Hebrew letters have four aspects, which are part of the four worlds. They're four categories. They're four ways of understanding. Every Hebrew letter in the scroll has these four characteristics. One is the shape of the letter. What does it look like in the scroll? One is its vowel. Every Hebrew letter has a vowel. It's usually referred to as the dots. It's what powers the sound of the letter. It embellishes, enhances the sound of the letter. Every shape, every Hebrew letter shape has a sound. Every letter has a vowel that enhances that sound. Hebrew letters have crowns. Some of the letters have no crowns. Some of the letters have one crown. Some of the letters have three crowns. None of the letters have two crowns. Some of the letters have bent crowns, of which we have lost the art of knowing how to make those crowns, so that we don't make them today. But we have writings from our sages of about 1,200 years ago that teach us that there are 1,800 specialized letters out of the thousands of letters, 600,000 to be exact. We have approximately 1,800 of these letters that have unusual crowns. What is a crown? The crown is called the tagim. The crown is the little things that kind of come out of the top of the letter that have a little dot and like a line connecting it to the letter. To give you an example, the Zion has three of them. The Aleph has none of them. The Gimel has three because it's made up of a Zion. The Dalet has one. When you look at the Hebrew letters, the tagim, the crowns, are part of the aspects of the letters, one of the aspects of the letters. And every Hebrew letter has a trope sign, except that the majority of the letters do not have a physical trope sign, because the trope sign is placed around the letter of a word, of each word. And that trope sign gives us the chanting of that word, and it also gives us the which syllable of that word gets pronounced and emphasized. Because the letter that the trope sign is put around is emphasized. It's the idea, like in English, of saying anti-disestablishmentarianism. Many syllable word. But the second syllable is the one that is most pronounced, anti, tie. When we look at the Hebrew words in the scroll, we really don't know where we should emphasize which syllable. But where the trope is placed does teach us that. And when it comes to trope, which is considered the chokhmah level, the wisdom level of the letters, when it comes to trope, there are two types of trope. There are tropes that are pauses, or they're called kings. There are tropes that stand on their own. And then there are tropes that are supportive, that tell you, flow this word into the next one. Sing and chant this as a flow. Don't pause. An example of a pause is a sentence, is the period at the end of a verse. That is a trope sign. It's associated with the last word in the verse. It's clearly telling you to pause. Other trope signs tell you not to pause, to continue the flow in the chant. So when I read the English translation of this first verse, I am Hashem, your God. The English punctuation is I am Hashem. And then there's a phrase separated by commas, your God. Another phrase, who has taken you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of slavery. But Anochi has a trope sign that says pause. Do not flow it into the next word. The next two words, Adonai Elohecha, have trope sign. The trope sign on Adonai says, flow this word into the third word. And the third word says pause. So it should be Anochi, I, comma, am God your God, comma. That's not the way we punctuate it in English, and it corrupts our understanding of the verse. But the real issue when you're talking about a mitzvah, and this is the source verse for a mitzvah, I am Hashem, your God, who has taken you out of the land of Egypt from the house of slavery. What's the command? What's the action that one is to do from this verse? And it is clearly referenced by all of the sages. It's a mitzvah that is associated with the Bnei Noach, before the Avraham, before the Jewish nation came into being. And it is a mitzvah clearly for the children of Israel. What is the mitzvah? What is the command? What is the action that we are to do? People don't know the answer to that question off the top of their head. It's something they really have to consider. So I will give you the answer instead of waiting for you to answer me. The mitzvah from this verse comes from the word Anochi, I. I represents ego. And from this, the sages relate that the action that we are to do is to know God. God does not have an ego like we have an ego. That is why when God speaks and uses the first person, Anochi, He has changed the spelling of the word. He has added a kaf. He's put the vowel as a vav with an O, but the vav never appears. Ever in the Tanakh does a vav appear with the word Anochi. It is spelled Aleph, Nun, Kaf, Vav. It is pronounced Aleph, Nun, Vav, Kaf, Vav. Knowledge. Knowledge is not complete. Can knowledge ever be complete? It's a rhetorical question. But it's a question that you have to answer for yourself as far as doing the mitzvah to know God. What is knowledge of a thing? We can describe in a physical world, we can measure, we can describe with words, we can paint a picture of something in the physical world. It has breadth, depth, height. It looks one way at 8 o'clock in the morning and another way at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. At least I do when I go to work. We can describe, paint pictures, talk about the knowledge of a thing. But what is the knowledge of God? One of my teachers repeatedly uses the example someone can read all of the books, all of the technical books about a woman's breasts and a woman's vagina, and all about sex, all of the technical medical science, physical science, emotional discussion around the concept of male and female bonding and sexual intercourse. But until that person has touched someone from the opposite sex, has felt that difference, has made that connection, has experienced sexual intercourse, one does not know what sexual intercourse or sex is all about. Knowledge is only thoroughly understood, connected with, when it is experience, when it is your personal experience. This is the answer of what it means to know God. We experience God by studying the physical world. We experience God by going out into the spiritual worlds. That's what's called meditation. We experience God when we sleep and we dream. We experience God in every action, minute, second of our days. We don't consider them experiencing God. So let's truly begin to understand what is this idea of knowing, which the Torah refers to sexual intercourse. Adam knew Eve, and she became pregnant, and gave birth to Cain and Abel. So the Zohar asks this question that everybody that never thinks about. Did Adam shake hands with Eve? Or did Adam have sexual intercourse with Eve? And the Zohar tells us that he did have sexual intercourse. What is experience? What is it to experience God? What is it to know God? This is the mitzvah, both for the children of Israel and the children of Noah, those who are not considered children of Israel. What does it mean to experience? How do you define experience? How do you explain experience? How do you tell a three-year-old what an atom is? Can the three-year-old experience an atom? Can our scientists experience atoms? A easy way to understand experience and relate it to the word knowledge is to visualize me standing in front of you about 3 or 4 feet away, holding a pen or a coin or a piece of paper in my hand. And I ask you the question, if I drop whatever is in my hand, will it fall to the floor? And the class, the people that's looking at this demonstration, will answer. Some will say, it will fall to the floor. Some will couch that statement with the statement, if you don't try and catch it after you drop it. Barring an unforeseen event of the wind blowing it onto the table. Barring someone else catching it before it hits the floor. It will fall to the floor. This is the answer that every person gives. I've done this as an experiment. I've only heard these kinds of answers. Once I heard somebody say, barring that an angel doesn't pick it out of the air and take it up to God. If I drop the pen, the coin, the paper from my hand, it will fall to the floor. Now, is that belief that I believe it will fall to the floor, or is it knowledge that it will fall to the floor? Every person answers, it is knowledge that it will fall to the floor. And then I ask the question, what is your knowledge based upon? And some people will say, every time I've ever dropped something, it's always fallen to the floor. And others will say, my knowledge is based on seeing things fall to the floor all the time. This is experience. I have seen things fall to the floor. This, based on this experience, time after time after time after time, and another after time, and another after time, I have the experience to know that the thing I drop from my hand will fall to the floor. Know God means experience God. But how does one experience God? How does one consider that there is a God? How does one come to believe in God and then transform that belief into knowledge, into certainty, into experience that there is a God? We have millions, billions of people in this world, and we will tend to categorize them. They believe what they believe. Some will say they believe that there is a creator. Some will even say that they know that there is a creator. Some will say, I don't believe there is a creator, chas v'shalom. Some will say, I'm not sure if there is a creator. All of these five people are experiencing God. All of these five people, even the one who says there is no God, chas v'shalom, is knowing God. And where does this knowledge come from? From their individual experience of their life. The typical argument of someone who is saying, I believe in God, is saying, I believe in God based on my looking around the world and seeing so many different species, so many different beauty, so much different beauty, so many different things that were created. I look around the world and there must be a creator because it's so diverse. These are some of the ways that people have arrived at the knowledge of God. In fact, the only way to know God is to experience it. Experience God either in a positive or in a negative. I tried to reach God and I couldn't find him, says a child of four. I tried to find God. I went, but he was hiding from me. I didn't find him. I didn't see him. A child of four. How does one know God? And as we will discuss in all of the mitzvot we will talk about, we need to have a consciousness of what we are doing. Without that consciousness, without that directed intent, a kavanah, we can arrive at conclusions about our knowledge that is incorrect. It's only incorrect relative to someone else. It's only incorrect in that it will cause us to do actions that lengthen our process of correction, our life, our lives. It is not incorrect when it comes to my perception of experiencing God. That is unique to me, just as it is unique to you. And you truly cannot reach that for someone else, only for yourself. Knowing God means to experience God. And experiencing God is an individually personal essence. There are many levels of the mitzvah of knowing God. There are many levels, meaning there are many people who experiencing God, experience even the exact same incident is experienced in a different way. We now all know the fish tank that has different colored glass, and the person looking through the yellow glass sees the fish as yellow, and the person looking through the green glass sees the fish as green, and so forth. But when I put a green glass in front of a yellow glass, and I look through and I will see it at blue, which is what green and yellow make together. And now if I reverse that glass and put the yellow on top and the blue and the green underneath, I will see it as a blue, exactly the same shade of blue, according to the physical scientists who measure the frequency of the light. But spiritually, there is a difference, which is first and which is second. And from this understanding, we learn many things about the Hebrew words that have the same letters but in different order. This is the experience of knowing God. What are we to do to know God? What steps are we to take to know God? There are the tools that we have to know God, to experience God, are the Hebrew letters that form Hebrew words, that form the Hebrew scroll called the Torah. The sages have told us that there are 70 levels of understanding the Torah, of knowing the Torah, of experiencing the Torah. They've also categorized that into four levels, like the four worlds. And the Ari has come and said there are actually 600,000 ways of understanding, of knowing the Torah, which means there is a different way of experiencing God for every root soul of the children of Israel. There's actually 6 billion ways of experiencing God, because no two human beings goes through the same physical stimulus in exactly the same way. As much as the physical scientists want to categorize people that they see and feel and touch the same way, we don't. But the scientists will continue to try and slot things into those categories. And I am doing the same thing when I talk about the mitzvot. I'm categorizing a mitzvah. To know God, mitzvah number one. Some of the ways of categorizing a mitzvah is to say, where is it done? And the way the sages have categorized its location is by saying it's done inside Israel and outside Israel, or both. And the mitzvah to know God is done both inside and outside Israel. But the sages have also taught us that there is a difference in experiencing and knowing God when we are inside Israel than when we are outside Israel. In fact, at the destruction of the first temple, the Jewish people had the belief that there was no prophecy outside of Israel. And then we have the prophet Ezekiel physically being outside of Israel, receiving a prophecy. It totally blew the minds of the nation, of the generation. There was a firm belief that prophecy could not come outside of Israel. And there have been explanations over the centuries that it was just a one-time event, that truly prophecy can only be received in Israel. And prophecy is one of the higher levels of knowing God. Who is the wise man? King Solomon told us, the one who sees tomorrow, the one who sees the effects of his actions. That's experiencing God. What and how are we supposed to experience God? How do we deepen our knowledge of God? The highest level, the level we are talking about receiving in our classes on Tuesday nights, we are talking about how to receive Ruach HaKodesh. But we have also spoken in that class about how to reach the level of the Talmid Chacham, the wise person, the person who has an experience of God that is even wiser, that is even greater, that it is even more than the prophet. How do we increase our experience and knowledge of God? Through study. Study Torah is one of the aspects of the mitzvah to know God. It is a separate part of the 613 mitzvot. There are two aspects. One is divrei, the words of Torah. The other is lasot, to be busy with the Torah. One is to physically read, look at, study, understand the depth of the words of Torah. The other is to live the actions of the Torah, to do what is right always. Each of these mitzvot, which we will talk about at greater length later in the series, each of these mitzvot raises our consciousness, our experience, our knowledge of God. What are we to do? How are we to increase knowing God? We start with the simple understanding. As the sages have taught us, there are four levels to know God. There are four levels of study. There is the Peshat level, the simple words, phrases, and sentences, paragraphs, the stories that are taught in the Torah, in the Tanakh. The Peshat. Peshat is translated as simple. The simple story. But the root of the word Peshat means to unclothe, to be naked. And one of the ways of understanding that is to realize that the Peshat level of Torah, the simple stories of Torah, is total connection. Total energy, unclothed, naked energy, when one understands, when one experiences, when one knows God through the stories of the Torah. And all of our sages have used stories, some allegorical and some just simple stories, to help us understand the various levels of the Torah. Peshat, the simple, unclothed level of Torah. And then we have the remez. The remez is the hints. The remez where we take one letter and it hints at a whole spiritual law. This is the aspect of the Torah. This is the aspect of increasing our knowledge of God on the level of study. Also, never forget, on the level of being busy with, of doing Torah. The third category is that of the drash. The drash is the allegorical understandings. People who read into the Torah morality. People who read into the Torah health reasons. People who read into the Torah many, many different levels and understandings, ethics and morals, health reasons. The drash, the level of understanding the story in a metaphorical manner. And the fourth level is the Kabbalah, what is called the Sod, the secrets of the Torah. The different levels of learning. The different levels of understanding. Some soul roots, some people come with soul roots where study of Torah is limited to one of the four levels. And others come with the ability to comprehend, experience, to know God on all of those four levels. Everybody is different. Everybody experiences God differently. The major tool to experience God is called Torah study. In the centuries, that major tool has come to mean Gemara study, Mishnah study, Talmud study. In our generation, it means Zohar study. This is why we read from the Zohar once a week, and we invite you to join us every Thursday night. Because experiencing God for our generation means to experience the Zohar, to study the Zohar. What is study? A mitzvah. Study Torah. What is study? What is the kavanah we need to utilize when we study Torah on any level? It's the directed consciousness that we are doing this not because we were commanded to do so, not because we want to do so. We are doing this action to give pleasure to the Creator. Does the Creator feel pleasure because I read the Zohar today? Can I affect the Creator? Truly, I do not affect the Creator. And truly, I do give pleasure to the Creator. It's a paradox. An amazing experience. How do we understand this paradox? Whatever action I do relative to the mitzvah of no God, I do to give pleasure to the Creator. Nothing for myself, nothing to be honored, nothing to be given, receive anything, even though all of those things will come from studying Torah. My consciousness, my reason to expand my experience of God, is to give pleasure to the Creator. And this is how I will receive the expansion of my consciousness to the level, the highest level that I can reach personally. My study effort, I do not learn because I put in effort to study. There are many people who memorize sections of the Gemara, sections of the Mishnah, sections of the Zohar, sections of Halakha, that part of the Torah that refers to the recommended path to follow, to know what is right. People experiencing Torah have very many different techniques on how to study. But the truth is, my understanding, my ability to understand, is a gift from the Creator. I need to appreciate that gift. I need to truly know that the only way I give pleasure to the Creator is by studying, by working on knowing God. And as I give pleasure to the Creator, I receive in turn understanding. There's a story told about the Baal Shem Tov, that one Shabbat, one third meal of Shabbat, he went into a short trance where he didn't speak in the middle of giving a story, a shiur, a lesson. And when he came out of that short trance, he said, a certain sage who lived in Morocco, a good 2,000 miles away, has died. And then he went on and finished his lesson. And later, during fourth meal, during Motzi Shabbat, one of his Talmid Hachamim, one of his students, asked him how he knew that this sage had died. And he said that when he went into that trance, Hashem had given him the understanding of a secret that only one person in the world has permission to know. And the person who had it previous to him was the sage. And he knew when the sage died because he was given that secret. He didn't study that secret. He was given that secret. He was given the understanding of that secret. This is what we truly need to know. What we understand of Torah is given to us. It isn't worked for. It's given to us as a gift. It's given to us in exchange for us giving pleasure to the Creator. So it's not a gift, or it is a gift. And that's for another discussion. We have reached the end of our time. I invite you to join me tomorrow night as we read the Parasha of Tetzaveh in the Zohar. I invite you to join me in the Kavanah of giving pleasure to the Creator. We will start at 10 p.m. Next week on Tuesday at 7:45, we will continue our discussion of Ruach HaKodesh. Next week at 10 p.m. L.A. time, we will continue our discussion of mitzvot. Before I leave you, does anyone have a question? Kol Tuv, Shalom.